talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Studio City, California. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show will help you question your career reality. That is why you're listening today. You may be stuck in a job where you're pushing that pencil, you're pulling your hair out, you're eating your hair, you're eating glass. There's all kind of weird things people do because you hate your job and you want to be in the entertainment business. Well, we bring people on the show who are in various careers who help you. Now, this show, again, it's for you if you were, are, or might be considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests provide advice, resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. And again, our guests work in various professions of entertainment, so that means we will definitely have someone on the show sooner or later from a career that you are interested. So you got to listen to every single show every week. Now, if you want to check out our past guests, read their bios, listen to their interview instantly, or download one of the shows, you go to the LA Talk Radio website. There's a little clue. If you're listening to me now, you're already there. So you click at the link at the top of the website that says Channel 1. You scroll down and look for the graphic of our show, Question Reality, and you just click the link. And this will take you directly to the archive page where you can view a list of the past guests. And our shows are also available for download on iTunes under the podcast section. So you just type in Question Reality Radio in the search box and you'll find it. Now, if you want to find out about future guests, visit our official website, questionrealityshow.com, questionrealityshow.com, and that has a list of our guests all the way up until August. Our show has become so popular, yay, that we are booked 6 months to a year in advance, and we're already working on the second week in August. So if you know someone that is a professional in the entertainment industry and would love to come on our show, we have an international fan database, and we are just popular, lore. So you can have them contact us, and we will look at them to be on the show. Now, as always, we have a fantastic guest for you today. Need you to get your little pen and paper out, too, because we've got a wonderful event that I want to tell you about. But the guest on our show today, his name is Yiannis Pappas, or Pappas. God, I hope I'm getting it right. Pappas. I'll just say Pappas, okay? So he is a comedian. He's a writer. He's a producer. He is doing it all, working it out, making it happen. And if you ever wanted to be a comedian, he is going to tell you all the steps that you need to take in order to pursue a career in comedy. And it's information that you definitely want to take heed of if you want to pursue that field. Now, you might want to check out his website while I'm giving you some other information. His website is DITCHfilms.com, DITCHfilms.com. He's also available on Facebook, MySpace, and YouTube under Yiannis Pappas. That's YiannisPappas. So check him out, because you might not be interested in my little advertisement, so you might want to check him out and then get to listen to him in a couple minutes. We're gonna come back to him. But first, I have some really bad news. Before we start with Yiannis, and I hate to do this to him, comedy and tragedy, but there you go. I want to announce the sorrow from me and the staff, Question Reality and LA Talk. Talk Radio at the recent passing of a most beloved person in the entertainment industry. No, not Elizabeth Taylor. We've had enough of that. A recent guest on our show, her name is Lorinda Starfelt. And I was so fortunate enough to have her and her lovely, talented husband, Brad Mays, on our show. They came and gave career advice on Sunday, January 30th, just a couple months ago. And our hearts go out to you and your families and your friends. She was so deeply loved, and she'll be forever missed by everyone who had the good fortune to know her. And again, we wish you all the best, Brad, and goodbye, our friend Lorinda Starfelt. So we loved you, and you were the best, and thank you so much for contributing to our industry. So we wanted to say that. Now, okay, we have a lot of things to cover today, so please pick up your pen and paper because we are about to take some notes, people. Now, our spotlight event this week is on casting director Helen Geier, and that's Helen, G-E-I-E-R. Her next workshop is on Saturday, April the 2nd, from 1:15 to 3 p.m., and it's at the Casting Workout, and that's located at the Exposure Studio, 741 North Cahuenga Boulevard. Again, Saturday, April 2nd, 1:15 to 3 p.m. at the Casting Workout, located at the Exposure Studio, 741 North Cahuenga Boulevard in L.A. The cost is $50. Very, very, I'd say a fair price for what you're going to get. For those of you who don't know her, Helen Geier is a busy, 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 busy lady. Not only does she work on some of the biggest television shows in history, she's also worked on huge films such as Hot Tub Time Machine, I believe, and Country Strong, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can check out all of her big, huge credits on imdb.com. I could go on and on, but we got to get to Giannis, so check her out on imdb.com. And this is said, from what I'm hearing, this is going to be a very exciting workshop, so you don't want to miss out on this one. Now, all of the actors need to bring in a scene to read. There's going to be a one-on-one with a reader. And the scenes, they must be appropriate for your type. Oh, my God. Now, what does that mean for those of you who are tuning in your first time? That means if you're 50, don't be bringing in a headshot with you in a let's get physical attire from the 80s and trying to pull that off, because that's not going to happen. And you know that you people do it. You know you come in there with headshots from the 80s still thinking you can pull it off. Not going to work. Okay, so remember, we talk about this at every opportunity, so you must know your brand or type. If you don't know, ask the people who give you the most criticism, and they'll tell you for sure. Now, remember that classes and workshops with casting directors are only a way to get a leg up on the competition, and they help you walk through the door to the next level of success. They're intended to help actors learn what the casting directors look for and fine-tune your skills that you've been learning from your acting classes. But workshops are not auditions. And I have to say that, but everybody knows what they are. But I have to say it, they're not auditions, and they are not a means to procuring employment. And I encourage you to think of workshops as educational, and you know, if you get some good casting directors, they kind of do some mentoring right there in class, just like a mini mentoring session, and it's a chance to kind of redefine and reestablish your passion. So workshops are definitely a place where you can have your voice heard and approach the business side of the show. It's an opportunity to ask all of the business questions. What's the proper etiquette on a commercial? What's this? What's that? Things that you won't get to ask if you go to an audition. So, but most of all, they give you the exposure beyond the 5 minutes of any audition to learn what, you know, the full expression of acting is in the business. And it's something that I highly recommend that you do. A lot of the workshops do require you to audition first to even be in them, but there are some that you can find to get started. So basically, if you're just getting started in acting, anybody who will take you, you need to get in just to learn. And then you move your way up, and then you can audition and get in the good ones. Okay, so now we are moving on to the most exciting part of the show, which is Yiannis Pappas. Now, let me tell you a little about Yiannis. He is a comedian, a writer, a producer, and he probably has more titles, some of which he doesn't want us to know about, but some good ones I might be leaving out and he can tell us later. But he is becoming a widely known, he's spreading himself out. He's becoming one of the most powerful and exciting comedians working today. And he has been featured on such shows such as VH1's Best Week Ever, BET's 106th and Park, MTV, National Lampoon Live, Chappelle Show, and Comedy Central's Adam TV. And he has created some really beloved characters. I believe one of them is, and I hope I get this right, Mauricia or Mauricio. He'll correct me in a minute. But the one I want to talk about is the beloved character, controversial, although be it, Mr. Panos. And Mr. Panos has been featured on the popular Lakis Lazopoulos show. I am going to be tongue-tied by the time I finish reading all of this stuff, because there are so many syllables in the Greek language, as you know. Now, the Lakis Lazopoulos show is very popular on Greek and Cypriot TV, and he has become a sensation on the internet and has amassed a substantial fan database. So he is moving on up to the east side. And recently, he was in a feature film, which was called King of Bee, and Yiannis, along with director Jesse Scaturo, founded Ditch Films, and they currently have films in festivals all around the world. Now, what I brought him on the show was, we know we don't get many comedians. I don't know where the hell they're hiding, but I think I've had one comedian that was on the show in 2008, and I don't know why I cannot find more professional comedians come on the show. They're probably too busy, and this comedian was part-time comedian, part-time professional whistler, so I don't even know if that counts. I think Yiannis may be actually my full-fledged, authentic, 100% all-beef comedian. So without further ado, let's talk to Mr. Yiannis Pappas. He's going to tell you how you're going to become a comedian and make so much money, right, Yiannis?
That's right. That's the goal of everybody who becomes a comedian. How can I make the most money and work the least? That's what it's all about.
You know, I got to tell you something real quick. I was just flipping out. My husband and I were watching, we were revisiting an old friend, a movie, Scarface, yesterday. And I saw Richard Belzer in there. And I'm like, I've seen that movie 5 times and I didn't even know he was on that show. But You see him in Law and Order. And I knew he was a comedian, but those jokes he was telling on Scarface, I'm like, oh my God, did he write that or did they force that poor man to say those jokes? So I just thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, well, he's a guy, even before the internet age, Richard Belzer was a guy who had his hand in a lot of different things. You know, he was actor. He started out as a stand-up, but, you know, ended up becoming an actor, kind of more known for his acting in a lot of ways because of the mainstream exposure. And he was, he's also a producer. And that's one of the things I always aspired to be, was sort of multifaceted, because I remember when I first started out, I heard an interview with Gary Marshall. Penny Marshall's father.
Yeah,
and
I
he
bet.
Said, you know, the entertainment business is very tough, and the way you keep yourself indispensable is by being able to do a lot of things. So he's like, you know, when my directing work dries up, I apply for acting work. My acting work dries up, I do a little producing, and when that dries up, I do a little writing. So it's if you're a comedian,
you know
you have
what?
That,
I'm so sorry we're overlapping. I'm so glad that you brought that up, Giannis, because there are so many people that are not in the entertainment industry who have relatives who've decided to pursue a career in entertainment, and they don't seem to quite understand that you do have to have a multifaceted career. You got to be a producer, a director, an actor, a comedian. You got to have a whole bunch of things that you're hopefully great at, but if not, at least good. But they look at people in the entertainment industry and basically say that we're flaky because we do so many things, and can't we decide which one we're going to do?
Yeah, well, especially nowadays with the internet and how technology has gotten, you can do all these things yourself. You can be proficient in all of them, and you should. Because, as opposed to just laying around waiting to be discovered or going on cattle call auditions all the time, you can actually promote yourself and create your own showcases that, you can put on the internet and promote out, and make it very easy for producers and casting directors to see your stuff just by, giving them a link. So I think especially at the beginning of your career, the more proactive you are with, pushing yourself out there and doing it yourself, the better, because there's a lot of downtime when you're going on auditions and you're waiting tables at night or whatever you're doing to support yourself during that initial stage of your career. There's always a lot of downtime because, that's just the way it is. We're not brain surgeons, so we're not working around the clock to find cures for stuff. So,
that's right. And you should always be doing something with your hands. And I don't care what you're doing with your hands, but you should be doing something, reading a book or doing something, not just with your hands, but with your mind. So I'm glad you brought that point up. Now, I want to start with our questions. I always ask this question of my guests. So my first question is, what profession did little Giannis Pappas see himself having as a child? Did you always want to be a comedian, or from your earliest memories, what did you want to do or be?
I didn't want to be a comedian when I was young, but my career goal was just as lofty. I wanted to be shortstop for the New York Yankees. That's what I wanted to be. Shortstop for the New York Yankees. That was my goal. And I pursued it by playing wiffle ball in the street, and then I took a ground ball to the nose, got a bloody nose, and I was like, all right, this isn't for me.
Had enough of that shit. This is too physical. Oh, so you didn't know there was any actual pain involved.
Yeah, no, I didn't know that could happen. And when that happened, I was like, I can't damage this pretty face, and I just moved on.
Hell no, I hear ya. So when was it that you discovered that you were gravitating towards the comedy or comedian type profession?
Yeah, well, I was always a class clown. I would get kicked out of class a lot, and I was always funny and always seemed to be the funniest guy amongst my friends and stuff. So when I graduated college, I didn't really know what to do. And when I got to college, I got a little more serious. I really enjoyed college more because the professors were more interesting. So I got a little confused and thought I was going to get in the government. But then I moved back to New York, and I was like, I saw an ad in the paper, if you want to be a stand-up comedian. I was like, let me give this a try. Everyone always says I should do it. And then I did my first set, and it just, I don't want to say it felt destined, but it just felt like this is where I belong. It just felt so right being on stage. So I just took it from there.
Now, some people say that you don't have to have an education. I you just said that you went to college, I imagine, majoring in something that was not in the entertainment business. So when they say you don't have to have – some people say it, not all. Some people say you don't have to have an education to be a comedian. Some say you at least need to have a high school degree. And some of them say that you should have a college degree or as much education as possible just in case it doesn't work out for you, which they say to everybody who's pursuing a career in entertainment. So what are your thoughts on that issue? Because I've seen comedians who are the funniest things, and they haven't even graduated high school. And then I've seen comedians who have the more sophisticated humor who have like master's degrees. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like you just said, I think you kind of answered it. I agree with you. I don't think it really matters. I think, everyone's journey is unique. And if you decide to go to college or you end up going to college, It doesn't matter. You may get a later start in comedy, but you'll be able to have a lot more life experience, so you'll be able to say more interesting things off the bat. You'll have a little more of an education. It doesn't matter. I do think, however, no matter what your formal education, you should always be trying to educate yourself, because the more you take in, the more knowledge you take in and experience you take in, the more you're going to have to put out as material. So either way, it doesn't matter what your formal education is, just as long as you're taking in experience and knowledge.
Yeah, and my take on that is try to get as much education as possible, because everybody should, I believe, in plan A, B, and C. But you can also still pursue a career in comedy. Just because you're going to college doesn't mean that you can't do the stand-up comedy workshops. You still can't be pursuing doing little open mic nights and things like that to kind of see where that takes you too. So I think you could do both.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the person. It really does. I mean, you know, like Dave Chappelle started when he was like 14 years old. So did Eddie Murphy. A lot of guys start real young. Sometimes I wonder, hey, if I would have started when I was a kid, I would have, I would have gotten more experience earlier, and my career would be taking off when I was younger. But you can, you know, shoulda, woulda, coulda. Everyone's got a different journey. I mean, yeah, college is not that great, though. I mean, you know, I went to college. I loved it. I think it's helped me as a comic, but ultimately I majored in history and I minored in literature, you know, which doesn't make me qualified for anything anyway. It just makes me qualified for maybe a high school diploma. Maybe
well, you could write some good George Washington jokes or something like that. But you know, I try to get people who are non-entertainment industry people to understand that there really isn't too much of rhyme and reason in the entertainment business, because you can go and get your college degree and pursue a career in, say, being an actuary, and then at 50 years old you can decide, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to be a comedian. Look at what happened with Phyllis Diller. My God, she was a housewife. Started, I don't know, 47 years old, 37, 47 years old. Look at how many comedians started when they were, you know, middle age. So there doesn't seem to be a particular formula. What do you think?
Absolutely. Especially with comedy, and thank God, because with comedy, it's not so much appearance or look based. So you can, you know, like when you're an actor or an actress, unfortunately, you know, Hollywood kind of judges you based on looks a lot, and youth, they worship youth. But as a comedian, all you need to do is be funny. I mean, like you said, a lot of comedians start late, also like Lewis Black, and there's a bunch of people who start late. All you got to do is be funny, and as long as you're funny, you could be 80, 90 years old. I mean, Joan Rivers is still selling out, and she's hysterical. So you could, yeah, everyone's path is different, and with comedy, as long as you're funny, that's the key.
have to be funny. You got to find your funny. Now, a lot of people think they're funny, but they're not funny. I know. It's just like people with when you watch American Idol. You can watch these people get up there for the auditions. We see it all the time. And they think they can sing their asses off. And they get up there and you are like, oh, hell to the no. You are so not trying to sing that shit. So just like in comedy, I go to a lot of comedy clubs and workshops and not workshop, comedy clubs and those improv things. And some people are funny and some are not. And I'm like, how did the people, it's subjective. So what's funny to you may not be funny to someone else. So my question to you, my next question is, I would think that you find out you're funny if you say things and a majority of the people laugh. But how can you be guaranteed that your friends and family members who are laughing, that you're going to make other people laugh? How do you find you're funny?
Yeah, well, when you start out, definitely your family and friends are going to be the ones who are coming to see you, which in a lot of times enables you to get up. They do what they call bringer shows. So they say, hey, if you bring 10 or 15 people, you get 5-10 minutes of stage time, whatever it is. So, of course, they're going to laugh and support you because they're your friends. In most cases, if you're really, really bad, they won't laugh because, you know, laughter is such an honest reaction. But, yeah, at the beginning of your stand-up career, specifically with stand-up also, yeah, you'll have them. They'll support you. And you're right. That doesn't mean you necessarily have what it takes. You have to kind of venture past that family and friend support and see how strangers react to you, you know, and after a little while, you'll get a gauge. I mean, I couldn't answer for anybody, but I think if you're in it like a couple years and you're bombing every night or every time you go up or 90% of the time, that's probably not for you. You know?
I know. I know. And I have a friend, God bless him, but he goes up. It's just amazing to me. And it really calls on my heartstrings because I have friends that, God bless them. I got to love them for trying. And I always say, you just keep on trying until the day you die. But some, they go up there and they have not, if four people in the audience laughed, I would say that would be a good night for them. But they go up and they try. And I'm right up there saying, you just keep going. But then, like my mother says, Priscilla, you cannot keep encouraging someone to pursue a career that they obviously are not talented in. Now, I've always been torn on that issue because I am always 100% positive of everybody's career, because if that's what you want to do, I say do it if it makes you happy. But do you really feel, how do you handle when you have friends or family members who want to be comedians, but they're not funny? Should you continue telling them that they are? I mean, just because they make you laugh, but what if they're bombing in front of people? What do you do?
I'm of the opinion. I mean, of course, I mean, people would react differently to that question, but me personally, you're asking me, I tell people. I think you're helping them if you tell them, because it's a very easy thing to tell if somebody has something special up there or somebody has potential. It's pretty easy. People have natural performing ability. They have charisma. They have witty minds. It's very easy to tell. And if you tell them, hey, this may not be for you, if it really is for them, they're not going to listen to you anyway, and they'll keep going, and they'll prove you wrong. So I say, be honest. Tell them. If you don't think they're funny, say, hey, you sure you're doing the right thing? Because if it is really for them, they're going to use that as motivation to become better comedians. If it's not, you're probably being the best friend that they could ever want by telling them the truth so they don't waste any more time and also waste audience's time, because there's nothing more awkward at a comedy show for the audience than when a comedian is not talented.
God bless. Oh, I know. We've been there. Now, what do you feel are the trials and tribulations of being a comedian?
Oh, boy. It is a painful pursuit. I'll tell you that right now. A lot of people get into it as young comics, and they want the fame immediately, and they ask questions when you're an older comic, like, how long did it take you to start getting paid? And I always find it funny because a young comic will be asking me this question at a show that I'm doing with him where I, in some cases, am not getting paid at all. So I'm like, you want to know where you're going to be in 10 years? You're going to be right where I am, where you are now. That's how hard it is. Like, especially in New York, it's very competitive, and there's a lot of comedians doing it. And, you know, it's a very tough profession, and you have to bomb in order to grow. So you're going to deal with a lot of rejection and a lot of ups and downs. And it's very painful. It's a very painful process. It's like cocoon the butterfly, like a snake shedding its skin. Sort of like you got to break all your bones to evolve, and it's really difficult, metaphorically speaking, of course. But
yeah. Well, I don't know. A couple comedians have had their bones broken, I'm sure, with their jokes at the end of the night, you know. So how important do you feel it is to know about the business aspect of comedy, and what is the business aspect of comedy?
Yeah, I actually think it's very important in today's world, because it used to be there was kind of a set formula to being a comedian. The way it used to work is you would work the clubs, you'd get into the clubs, and then the clubs, there was a lot more exclusive. There was a lot less comedians, a lot less people trying to be comedians back then. And if you got into the clubs, eventually you worked till you got a late night set, and then you got a late night set. And once you did a late night set, everyone's career usually took off, either as a writer, as an actor. You usually got a sitcom written around you, something. One of those things happened for you, and you took off. That changed. Now, a late night appearance means absolutely nothing. I have friends that have done 2, 3, 4, and they're right back in the clubs. Maybe 5 people will add them on Facebook. They'll get 5 more fans. You know, because TV is in such transition with the internet and the saturation of channels. The viewership's way down, so it doesn't mean what it used to. So it's very important to know about all the aspects of the business, because you, as I said before, have to create a lot of opportunities for yourself when you start. You have to produce your own shows to get yourself stage time. You got to promote. You know, you just have to be familiar with every aspect of the business because you have to create the business at the beginning. You know, the clubs don't pay very much, so you're not going to be able to really support yourself that way exclusively. You know, I've run shows, and I have had friends who've run their own shows where, you know, they make $1,000 a week because they set up, they go to some bar and they on an off night and they tell the owner, hey, can I run a show here? And on a Tuesday or Wednesday, promote it, charge $5-$10 at the door. And then if the show gets hot and it catches on, next thing you know, you're making a couple $100 a week for yourself. You know, you're paying other comedians, you're creating work. So it's important to know about the business because we are, on the small level at the beginning, we are the business in the modern day.
So you mean if you say you want to run a show, what does that mean? Kind of like you put yourself in the position of being a producer where you MC and then you also find comedians that are kind of like you go out and scout them and then bring them and then they bring people. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, they don't necessarily bring people, but you hire the comedians or you ask your friends that you know from the circuit to come perform. Usually you'll MC or you'll just produce. And you make a deal with the restaurant or bar, or maybe you get a piece of the bar, maybe you just charge a door deal, and you invite people and you try to make it happen yourself. And a lot of rooms in New York have become very popular that way, and some of those rooms have become even more popular than the clubs. Like I have a room that I run every Sunday night. It's in my neighborhood. That's why I started it. It's just a couple blocks from my house, and you know, it was just written up in the Wall Street Journal as one of like three or four of the most popular shows in Brooklyn. And you know, I make a little money from it. So, and
where is it? What's the name of the place?
It's called Bar 4. It's in Park Slope, Brooklyn, on 7th Avenue and 15th Street, in New York City.
All right. Woohoo! Oh, whoa! I wish I could come and see you there. Now, let me ask you. I have a question about writing jokes. Now, I've always wondered about this. When you write your jokes, how important is it to keep them secret? Is it sort of like keeping the secret for Kentucky Fried Chicken, or you don't give a crap who sees your jokes because only you can execute them the way you can execute them, Ernie? You know, how important is that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big issue in the comedic community. And as you move up the ranks, you kind of become part of the informal body that polices that type of stuff. When I say that type of stuff, I mean joke thievery. It happens. It's not so important for you to keep it secret. It's much more important that you do not steal. I would say that. And that's why comics rarely keep their jokes secret. And a lot of times comedians will bounce jokes off each other. We'll be hanging out. I'll be like, hey, what do you think? They think this is funny? And my friend will be like, yeah. And he might even offer some advice on a tagline or help me with that joke, because comedians just sort of have an understanding. It's like a self-policing community where joke thieving is just looked so down upon that the social pressure from all of us usually controls it pretty well. And it doesn't happen that often, because when it does happen, that person is kind of excommunicated from the community. It's really bad. You become like a social pariah. And you kind of get blackballed a little bit, and everyone looks down on you. So I would say it's more important not to steal than it is to worry about keeping your joke secret.
Wow, I had no idea. That's some serious shit, huh? Wow, I didn't know it was that serious.
There was a really good article written about it recently, I think in either The New Yorker or New York Magazine. I can't remember. If you research online, there's a really good article about how the comedic community really polices that well.
Wow. I mean, that's mind-boggling to me, because you think, I always have thought, when are they going to run out of lyrics for songs? Like every song in the history of music has been done, yet people still keep writing songs. And then you think, when are they going to run out of material for films and television? Yet they still keep bringing it on. And sometimes I remember hearing lines that were funny and I go, oh, where did I hear that? I know I heard it before. So there's repetitious lines in songs and then in movies and television. So how do you not write the same things with jokes?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to happen. There's a lot of parallel thinking and writing that happens, especially amongst younger comedians. I look at comedy, especially stand-up, as like martial arts. You know, as you get better, you become a green belt and then eventually a black belt and then ninja status, like the Louis C.K.'s, the Bill Burr's, the Dave Chappelle's, the Doug Stanhope's of the world, Chris Rock. At that level, I think it's kind of impossible to steal or be generic, because when you become a ninja, and if we're continuing with my analogy, you have stripped yourself of all fear. You know, because when you're up there on stage, it's a very scary thing, you know, to bomb. I mean, people's number one fear is public speaking. So you've been doing it so long, you've stripped yourself of all fear, that you're really projecting you. Your persona is really you. So anything that you're talking about is filtered through who you really are, and nobody could really ever imitate that. So your premise might be similar to something that's been said before, but with your slant on it, and you being a ninja, like I said, you just projecting you and your life and your experience, it gives it that unique twist on it that kind of makes it, you know, thief-proof. You can't really take it.
I see. So that was kind of like where I was going next with my question. I was thinking, you know, how does an aspiring comedian find a comedic persona? And once you do, are you in fear that it be stolen by another comic? But I would imagine you answered that question, because if you have a certain comedic persona, such as indistinguishable, like Chris Rock and Eddie Murphy and any of the other greats, nobody could do that, because you're kind of like, that's your own identifying way of doing comedy, right? But how do you find it? Is it just who you are, or do you have to work on it? Is it an act, like is it Clark Kent and Superman, where you're one person and then you have to put on your Superman outfit?
I think it's just like in life. Like I said, at the highest level, if you're doing it right, the highest level, it's much like life. In life, one of the most difficult things to be, because we're a social species and we imitate so much to learn and we yearn for acceptance, one of the most difficult things to be is yourself. You have to, you know, you have to sift through all the influences and culture and things that are forcing you to conform. So it's very much the same thing on stage as a comedian. Once you get past all that fear, conformity, and imitation of other comedians who you admire, who you might be using to help your persona along because you know that it works and you've studied them before, like maybe you'll be a young comedian who's imitating Chris Rock. You know you're imitating Chris Rock because it's a successful formula. Ultimately, you'll shed that skin and be more you. It's just you. So when you're a fully developed comedian, it's really you who you are. I think the goal of comedy is the goal of life. If you want to live it right and be happy, I think the only way to do that on a comedy stage and in life is to really be yourself. So that's what ultimately happens when you become a fully developed comedian. And that's your persona. That's how you develop a persona. Strip yourself of all the fears, conforming influences, and you'll find that comedic soul that is the God-given or achieved ability that has made you a comedian in the first place.
So you would probably say that the ultimate goal of a comedian, what should it be, or what should they have achieved at the end of their lifetime? What do you feel that is?
That, I think that varies from person to person. Whatever I think that it's a lot of comedians you could ask may answer that differently. If you're asking me personally, for me, because I can't speak for anybody else, I would say my goal is to affect the world in a positive way through my comedy, in some small way, somehow. So, you know, because to me, I look at comedy as an art, and it's humans, like Mark Twain said, it's our strongest weapon, and it can be used to fight against evil and to, you know, it's sort of like comedy's like giving people a truth pill that's sugar coated. So it's like, you know, you're giving them a pill, but you're coating it with sugar so they don't know that it doesn't go down bitter.
Right.
So, I measure it against the Chaucerian kind of definition of art, mm-hmm. which is to me, he says, art is instruction and delight. So I always strive in my comedy to edify just as much as I do entertain. And so if I'm doing both those things simultaneously, I'm very happy personally. There's a lot of other comedians who are kind of more entertaining and they are edifying. That's great too. I think everything is a place for it all. It runs a gamut. And that's just my personal goal with comedy, is to, you know, just change people for the better a little bit, because comedy does at its best bring people together.
Absolutely. And now I've heard from friends and family members and also comedians that off stage, most comedians can be dark and moody and unpleasant. Do you feel that that's a fair assessment? Are comedians getting a bad rap? Or are you guys really like that? And does it take that to tap into your comedy?
I would say from my experience, and I'm, you know, a lot of my friends are comedians, as you might guess, yes, that is true. I would say most of us are kind of dark and gloomy off stage and, you know, have a lot of issues. I think it helps to be in therapy. That's a good thing. Yeah, I don't know why that is. I think we develop senses of humor maybe as a defense mechanism or a way to deal with pain as a child. You don't necessarily have to have a hard life. I know many of my friends have had great lives, great families, and they're great comedians or good comedians. But often you'll find that there's a lot of problems and issues there. And yeah, in a lot of ways, you know, I think comedians are kind of like martyrs for pain. You know, mm-hmm. We go up there and we talk about very painful stuff and annoying stuff that we all deal with every day or we feel, and we turn it into jokes. So we take in all that pain and we turn it into, you know, we give you all these laughs and joy, and nobody really makes us laugh. That's the problem. Because when you're a comedian, you get jaded and you're so caught up in the craftsmanship of it, it's hard to sit down and enjoy and laugh at anything. And we're such narcissists and attention-seeking children anyway that we can't even just turn our own minds off for a second and sit down and relax and enjoy another comedian. So there's not a lot of joy that comes in because we're getting
Well, you've just given us some characteristic traits to look for within yourself that is going to tell you also if you have what it takes to be a comedian. We've got narcissistic. You've given us more. So if you're narcissistic, self-involved, self-centered, you might have what it takes. So, all right, that makes sense. Now, I've read in your bio that you are a very popular comedian, or you have a popular personas or comedic personas among the Greeks and Cypriots. And I had a very close friend named Spirulla Paparoklias in high school who was from Cyprus. And she was so funny. She wasn't a comedian, but she was so funny. And we had so much fun together back in the 80s. She was always so upbeat and cheerful. And I found that was the case with most Greek people that I have met. They have such robust personalities and they are just hysterical. I just love Greek people. I love them. And why do you think there aren't as many Greek comedians? I just wanted to ask that.
Yeah, well, it's a rich culture. It's a very emotional culture for sure. It's not like, you know, I travel in Scandinavia and do shows there. They're very cerebral. Greeks are very emotional. I think that there are actually a lot of Greek comedians. If you think about it, Dimitri Martin's Greek, Zach Galifianakis is Greek, Tina Fey's Greek, David Sedaris, Amy Sedaris, myself, Angelo Zaroukas, he just had a special on Showtime, he's Greek. My buddy Manolis in Canada. There's Kostaki Economopoulos. I just struggled.
I only recognize Tina Fey and then I think three more of them. Oh my God, I had no idea there were so many. Well, then that question's moot then. Let's get that one. I didn't even know Tina Fey was Greek.
Yeah, Tina Fey's Greek, and Jennifer Aniston's also Greek. She's a comedic actor.
Yeah, oh my God, there you go. Well, hey, forget that question. Now, you've been on such popular shows like VH1's Best Week Ever, BET's 106 in Park, MTV, National Lampoon Live, David Chappelle Show, Comedy Central, blah, 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 blah. It goes on and on and on. And I am sure that that is considered like a dream for a beginning comedian. So my question is, how do you get on these shows? Do you have to have an agent, a manager? Give us the scoop on how it's done. How can a young comedian or beginning comedian aspire to be where you are? How do you do it?
Yeah, I'll answer that part. I'll answer that question in two parts. The first part is, for me, to answer your question, the way it happened for me in various different ways. I had a manager at the time when I did 106 in Park on BET. He got me on that. He got the showrunner to come to a club and look at me. So he was just very proactive promoting me and trying to get me on. They were doing showcases at that time. VH1's Best Week Ever, I got on that because I started a sketch group when I first started. Again, you got to be proactive. And my writing partner in that sketch group ended up being one of the producers at VH1's Best Week Ever. So he had me on kind of through nepotism. It happened that way. Same thing with Chappelle's Show. I was very good friends with Donnell Rawlings, who I'm still very good friends with, and I used to open for him all the time on the road. He was Ashy Larry on the Chappelle Show, and he just got me on the show. I did a bunch of background stuff. So it happens various ways. There's no rhyme or reason, but the theme is always be proactive. You know, create as much work as you can for yourself. And that leads me into the second part, which is, again, modern day times. Television is not really as important as it used to be when you're trying to build a fan base and get your name out there. I would concentrate more now on the internet. It's your more people, the numbers now of, there's more people on the internet than there is watching TV combined. That's the way it goes. So most of the comedians who seem to be really blowing up now are getting big on the internet, and their fan base is being formed on the internet. Like for me, I have two characters, like you said earlier, Mr. Panos and Marisa, that are kind of catching on and taking off. More recently, Marisa. And when I do shows now, I have tons of people coming out to see me because of those characters. And I think if you concentrate on the internet more than TV when you're starting, it's just a wiser thing for the future, because I think it's just going to get more and more internet. I think TV and internet are going to merge, and kids nowadays, I think, are not even really watching television. Everything's on demand. They go to Hulu. And they're always on their laptop. So it's just media's changing. The landscape's changing. So the internet is such a powerful tool. So use it as best you can.
Yeah, and you do the two characters, Mauricio and Mr. Panos, for vlogs. And I imagine, now where would we go to see those two characters on this vlog? Where do we see Mauricio and Mr. Panos?
Yeah, you can see either one of those if you just go to YouTube and search Mauricio, M-A-U-R-I-C-A, or Mr. Panos, they'll come up. They've really gotten popular on YouTube.
Okay.
So that's where
Marisa, M-A-U-R-I-C-A, and Mr. Panos, P-A-N-O-S. So we're going to check those out. Ow! Now, recently you and your partner started your own production company, Ditch Films. Yay! Now, what type of films do you do, and do you accept scripts, or what are you doing over there?
Yeah, we accept, we're so small now that we kind of almost read anything that comes in, because we're open for ideas. We do short films. We've done a lot of, we produce Mr. Panos and Marisa ourselves, and we do some commercial work. So we'll do a lot of online commercials and branded content for companies that are looking to sort of do user-generated looking, you know, comedic videos. So all the videos we do are, have a comedic slant. And some of them are all for our own personal, you know, comedic, you know, sensibility for us. And some of them are for hire. You know, sometimes we do for hire. So, you know, comedic for commercials. Yeah.
So you're a comedian for hire. I might have to hire you for some stuff. Now, I heard that a DJ, very exciting, a DJ in New York took some of your sayings from your character, Mauricio, and turned it into a club song. How can we hear that song? Where do we go to hear that?
Yeah, there's a few of them, actually. I think a few people have made some mixes, some club mixes for Marisa. You just, if you, like, again, search Marisa, it should come up. I can't remember the DJ's name. I think there's more than one. But in that search, that'll probably come up with the videos. There's four of them. There's four videos. They're like these faux dating profile, online dating profile videos for the character. And it's funny because a lot of people think the character is real. So she's a Puerto Rican transsexual from the Lower East Side.
So Wow, so we just go to YouTube and type Mauricio, M-A-U-R-I-C-A, and it should come up along with the vlogs for Mr. Panos, too.
Right. When you type in Mr. Panos, same thing will happen.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, you have become an internet sensation via YouTube, and I guess that's how you're getting your work now. And yeah. Are you still pursuing a career in acting as well? And are you an actor?
Yeah, absolutely. Acting. I'm in most of the stuff that we shoot. Okay. I write it. Me and my partner is just two of us. We do everything, you know, from writing it to post-production. And I'm also in most of this stuff. So, yeah, I was in King of Bee. Was a very independent movie. When I mean very independent, I mean literally like a budget of ham sandwiches and, like, you know, food. We did it for no money, but it was a great experience. And he's shopping it around to, you know, it's in consideration, I think, for the Tribeca Film Festival. Hopefully they'll get in. But it was a great experience, and I love acting. And, yeah, you can, if you want to see my stuff, it's on our page. Just go to YouTube and go to Ditch Films. Just put a search in for Ditch Films or youtube.com/Ditch Films or go to our website, ditchfilms.com, and I'm in most of the stuff. So, yeah, I love it. Acting is one of it's probably just as much a passion as stand-up and filmmaking. I just love it all. I love it all.
Well, you're doing it all, and you are, I think I'm going to have to, I'll be paying to see you in the near future, I'm sure, when you come to LA to do a show. Please keep me on your list, and I will let all of our fans and everyone on the show know when you're coming to LA to do a show, so you got to get yourself here. Now, lastly, we got 1 minute. I'm going to put you on the spot and ask me to tell us, the audience, your best joke. Give us one. Take us out with your best joke, Giannis.
I don't know if I could do that. You'd have to pay to come see me. That's my joke.
I like that. That's the joke. We're not getting anything from Giannis. All right, Giannis, are you coming to LA?
I have no plans for the immediate future, but I will be there soon for sure. And, you know, if you want to follow me, just go to Facebook. I have a fan page, Giannis Pappas, and I post dates and shows all the time on there. So eventually I'll be coming out west, but for now I'm in the Northeast Quarter. You know, I'm booked up here for a while, so.
Damn, Giannis, damn! All right, well, we hope to see you out in L.A. Again, check out Mr. Giannis Pappas on YouTube. Also, you can catch him at ditchfilms.com, and you are going to blow up the comedy world. I know you got a great personality. I love your voice. I swear you could also be a radio DJ if the comedy thing doesn't work out. You got a great voice. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Giannis. God bless you, and thank everybody for listening to Giannis Pappas today. Say goodbye, Giannis.
Thank you so much, Priscilla. This was a lot of fun, and good luck with this radio show. It was a lot of fun.
I'm gonna lock you into coming on later on in the year. I just have to talk to Joel. We're gonna work it out.
That's good.
I'm gonna talk to some friends and get you booked out here, but we'll talk later. Bye. Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.